Welcome into week six of the Lemon Pepper Parlay Podcast. I'm your host, Martin Weiss, joined here with NFL Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh. TJ, how'd you do this week on your picks? Because I'm pretty sure you were undefeated.
I did pretty damn well, actually. I need to really start paying attention to these picks later in the week. Because you go early in the week, you don't overthink it. You just make the pick. Mm-hmm. And then later in the week, you start getting things in your mind that kind of sway you from what you thought and believed in early in the week. Go with your first mind and just roll it out. Yeah, but this, I'm telling you, man, I don't know what it is about early in the week, man. We fantastic with these picks. Like, I think people don't realize, man. Like, we giving it to them.
Well, because one of the things about betting early in the week or just picking games early in the week is because the lines obviously move and adjust. Like, you could even bet on games in week seven that haven't happened yet, right? Because, I mean, obviously they're set up, you know, according to what they think is going to happen, right? But, you know, you can get a lot of value on games. Like, for example, me and you picked the Chargers and Browns on a Tuesday. That game was a pick 'em. On Sunday, if you wanted to bet on the Chargers, that game was Chargers minus 2.5. That's a significant amount of points.
You know what's crazy about that game? I'm glad you brought that up. The referees literally gave the Chargers that game. The Chargers didn't win that game. The referees handed it to them. They handed that game to them. The Browns won that game.
Let's get to that in just a second.
Here you go. Hold on a second. Los Angeles Chargers, we don't want the Cleveland Browns to win, so we're going to give you the game.
All right, we'll talk about that game in just a second. But first, we will be remiss to not talk about John Gruden being forcibly resigned, right? Because he wasn't going to resign until these emails came out. John Gruden is now out as a coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. And quite honestly, I think my first opinion of the first initial reaction is, you know, I don't pretend to think that anybody in the NFL or most of the people in the NFL are angels or do not have any type of dirt or skeletons in their closet or so on and so forth. However, I don't understand how the head coach of a national football team, and this is in back-to-back or it's almost back-to-back weeks now, can be so foolish or so irresponsible, right? To have these, have correspondences on anywhere that can be documented through the workplace, right? That's the thing that really gets me, especially when you're operating in this. And it's just with John Gruden and with Urban Meyer before him, and they act like they're untouchable and act like they're Teflon. And in reality, but there's a lot more at play than just John Gruden and his emails. But the Las Vegas Raiders had no choice. They had to either fire him or force him to resign.
I mean, this just goes to show you, man, like you can be so smart and intelligent, yet so stupid and dumb at the same time. Like, rule number one, you learn this growing up. At least I've learned this growing up. You don't leave a trail. Like, he didn't think it was going to see the light of day. He thought those emails were technically invisible. Like, you don't send something that you wouldn't say. Those emails, I guarantee John Gruden thought, nobody's ever going to see these.
And the thing is, too, okay, in these emails, Shannon said this on TV, and it stuck with me. Because everybody has biases. Everybody grew up somewhere, had somebody do something to them. They don't care for one thing or another that somebody happened to. But I think what he said on TV, and it stuck with me, is like the true character of you is, what do you do when that person, when you get upset by somebody from that other group? Do you run to that bias immediately? Do you automatically run to, oh, this person is this, that, and the third? It's like, no, if you can sit there, you control, you got what you got going on, and fairly evaluate the situation and say, this is wrong and this is wrong. Not because this person doing this is a woman, or this person doing this is Roger Goodell, or this person doing this is black, or this person doing this is whatever. If you can objectively assess the situation, that's your true mark of your character, right? If you're running to these slurs and name callings and so on and so forth, as soon as you get upset, that's also the true calling of your character. But at the end of the day, it's like we basically said in The Wire, We don't talk on the phones. We don't talk in the car. We don't talk to anybody that ain't us and around nobody that ain't us. And at the end of the day, quite honestly, if you are the type of person that harbors these types of feelings, I should never find out about it because you should be smart enough to hide it.
Gruden was working for ESPN at the time, calling Monday night games. And he was just pissed off. And whether you're racist or not, I don't care. Whether you're homophobic or not, I don't care. The problem is, if you are these things, are you treating those people any different? And that's where the problem lies, right within itself. Like, think about, like, he didn't resign or get fired because he said something racist. Let's just be honest. They forced him to resign because he had the homophobic emails and a misogynistic tones in his emails that was the, it wasn't the racist comments that got him fired. It was
I truly honestly think that it was all, not to be like conspiracy theory tin hat, I think there was a rollout. If he did not resign yesterday, there would have been another
more email. Today.
There would have been, yes, more emails today.
Hey, it was
been,
like,
there would have been more emails the next day
for you. Okay, you're not going to fire him? We're going to release this. Oh, you're not going to fire him? There's something else for you.
Right.
Oh.
So I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I think that any of these first initial emails could have come out and he might have been able to save himself.
Hey, it was, but like
the tidal wave was just over and over and over.
Y'all don't
and
get
over.
The Mark Davis. You don't get the point now? Okay, we're going to give you something else. You don't get the point now? Okay, well, I get the point.
And that's the thing. I love how, like, you know, the media, Gruden is not painted, so to speak, but like the idea of Gruden resigned. Of course Gruden resigned. He knew that at no, Mark Davis, the only option that he had was he was going to give him the Jazzy Jeff right out of Allegiant Stadium.
Hey,
right? So he knew he had to resign.
Does he get the remainder of his contract?
No, I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that.
I mean, basically you resign or you're fired for cause, huh?
But my final point on this is the power of television. Because TJ, you've never worked, I know you've had a lot of work experience as an NFL wide receiver, but you've never had work experience as a call screener at a major Detroit radio station. And let me tell you something. When you are working in a city with a team that is not happy with the head coach, from 2000, whenever John Gruden got in the Monday night booth, to whenever he got out of that Monday night booth to go coach the Raiders, John Gruden was the most popular call-in head coach candidate. Every single team. You know why? Because everybody saw John Gruden on Monday night saying Spider 2, Y Banana, and breaking down quarterbacks and doing the Chucky dance, and completely irrelevantly forgot that he only won one Super Bowl with Tony Dungy's players, and everywhere he's been since it has not been great. You know, and just ignoring all the other things that came around because he got that Super Bowl and because he was good at television.
Hey, it's easy to act smart until it's time to be smart.
Hey, and speaking of somebody who is, I mean, decent on television and probably not acting smart at all, let's get in our recap, because I just know this. My Urban Meyer first coach fired ticket felt like it was in great danger over the weekend as I saw these John Gruden emails come out. So I appreciate him falling on his own sword. So sportsbooks did not cash out, because Urban Meyer is going to get fired if he resigns too, I swear. But in any event, TJ, me and you both took the Titans -4. It was Titans 37, Jaguars 19. Kevin Byers scooped up a fumble with 1 minute left in the first quarter, and we never looked back.
Yeah, that game was a blowout. It just makes you wonder. We talked about, what are these coaches thinking? Like, Derrick Henry, you will not run for 100 yards. Like, I'm forcing them to beat me throwing the ball. I'm not letting Derrick Henry beat me when your receivers are out. A.J. Brown is coming back and he's not 100%. Like, I just don't understand what these dudes do all day and night when it's time to game plan. Derrick Henry's getting the ball at least 55% of the snaps. Corners, you guys got to hold up on the outside. Don't get nothing, get beat. Don't give up anything over the top. Make them throw it short. We're going to stop the run. Simple.
I mean, I appreciate your entire football breakdown of what happened in this game, but the reality of what happened in this game, I feel like broke down in the post-game press conference. They asked Urban Meyer, "How do you feel about getting a win?" He goes, "We're desperate for a win, desperate each way they each desperate for a, desperate." Blah, blah. They asked Urban Meyer. He says he's desperate for a win, desperate for the way they go to work each day, desperate for a win. Trevor Lawrence says, "You can't get desperate. You just got to keep going to work." And if that doesn't encapsulate, I mean, your head coach and your quarterback are supposed to be in sync, right? Incommunicado, in cahoots. These two guys couldn't be further apart. I mean, if this is a marriage, this is like Lucy and Desi sleeping in separate beds, right?
If you're desperate for a win, once you get that win, then what? Does the desperation go out of the window? I mean, you're desperate every week. Every week. And Urban is seeing that. It's not easy to win in the National Football League. He's lost more. He's going to lose more games this year than he probably lost in his last 5 years at Ohio State total coaching. He'll lose more games this year.
I'll be honest. If he loses this weekend, that might be the amount.
He might lose more games this year than he lost his entire career at Ohio State. If I'm Urban Meyer, honestly, and I don't even know if they would want him. I'm trying to get the USC, man. I'm trying to get the USC. Fire me. Fire me. The owner, Shad Khan, fire me. Let me see if I can get the USC. But does USC want him? He can recruit, and he can win at the college level. To me, that's all that matters. Get him back. Put SC back on the map, Pete Carroll style, 5 or 6 years, and right off into the sunset.
Yeah, TJ, what did I say? Urban Meyer lost 6 games at Ohio State. Forgive me. He lost 9 games at Ohio State. I'm so sorry.
More games.
He's going to lose more games this year.
Provided
that he makes it this long. Because, TJ, let me ask you your opinion on this, because you've been on good teams and you were on a couple bad teams. Jason Lockett, for CBS Sports Analyst, says the team was breaking huddles in practice instead of like 1-2-3 break or 1-2-3 go. They were saying 1-2-3 grind. In reference to Urban Meyer and his actions at the Urban Meyer Pint House. If that's the case, even the backup second string special teamers breaking huddle like that, the locker room's gone, right? He has like that's not happening in a place they have respect.
That's just a way of making fun of the situation, guaranteeing the locker room. Whoever the team leaders on that team was like, hey, every break today, we're going to break it 1-2-3 grind. So then you go around the entire locker room and you be like, hey, y'all got that. You got that. You got that. And some might be a little nervous about doing that. Nah, motherfucker, you going to do it. So when the second group, you got to break. He don't want to do it. You got to break. And so that's how it goes. You just get in that locker room, make sure everybody knows what you're going to do. And what is he going to do? He can't get mad.
But my point is, though, all right, just take the two 0-5 coaches. I don't think anybody is going into Allen Park today, boo, like fake crying because Dan Campbell cried in his post-game press conference. Like, am I reading that wrong? It feels like.
But Dan Campbell hadn't done what Urban Meyer has done. Urban Meyer, this is Dan Campbell's, in essence, his first head coaching opportunity, although he was an interim coach. This is his first head coaching opportunity. And so he's approaching it for sure a lot differently than Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's been a head coach for years upon years upon years. Guarantee he thought, okay, I'm going to go into Jacksonville. I'm drafting Trevor Lawrence. We're going to take some lumps, but we're going to show a ton of progress. And it's not happening the way he imagined or he thought it would. I guarantee he thought it wouldn't be this bad. And no, so...
There's no way that he thought he would have. He never envisioned he'd have this level of struggle.
No, he didn't envision this. He's having second thoughts about this. And so who cares what people say? Who cares what they think? Because if you go to SC and win, all this will be forgotten. You go to SC and win, it will say, oh, he really can't coach. Like, oh, the grinding that he did in Columbus with his little mistress, it's a thing of the past.
So, going on to another first-year head coach, of which they seem to have no regrets whatsoever, even though you didn't like the outcome of the game, The Chargers beat the Browns 47-42. We talked about this game on Tuesday. Like I said earlier, it was a pick'em at that point. Game closed at -2.5. You wanted the Chargers. So obviously that's why you buy early if you like a side. So that pass interference call was pretty egregious.
That was bad. If they don't, how, and I'm an offensive player, I'm grabbing the DB. That was 4th and 8. If people recall, that's turnover on downs. Game is over. Game is pretty much over. Like, these officials have been so bad. Initially, I thought, man, baseball and basketball by far and away have the worst officiating of any professional sports. I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. Like, you watch football, you watch the Niners game. It's a safety. Oh, it's not a safety because they said the holding occurred outside of the end zone. And then when you watch the replay, he was held in the end zone, which should have been a safety. You watch the Charger game from the previous week. Bosa was held. They didn't call it. He says something about it. He gets a penalty because they missed the call. And they fine him for berating a fish. Fine. Like, this is a passionate game. When you miss calls that are game changers or you make calls that are game changers and you're wrong, you should be held accountable. Because when I lose my composure because of those missed calls and I say whatever I say, I'm held accountable financially. Why aren't you held to the same standard that I'm held to? You're costing us games. Like, that cost the Cleveland Browns a game. The Chargers are a really good football team, but that cost the Cleveland Browns that game, and that referee knows it. And that ref was refereeing when I was playing. It's just unfortunate, man, that they can make calls that can change the course of the game.
That's the thing that gets me, though, TJ, because I never, I ignored the refs for most of my, the refs were just objects, not people, for most of my fandom, right, until I got into the business more and more and more. And then also, like, the New Orleans Saints, when that pass interference call, I then learned every name of everybody on that crew. Because because that was the most egregious call I've ever seen in my life, save Golden Tate and MD Jennings in the back in the end zone up in Seattle when it was a week 4 of replacement referees, which is honestly the reason why I realized I had to get into this business, TJ, because that night, Monday Night Football, I will never forget this. I was at my ex-girlfriend's house on North Campus at University of Michigan. It was 12:45 in the morning, and I couldn't sleep because of this crime that had been committed against football, and I called the league office and left a voicemail for Roger Goodell. And it's to the general switchboard. I told him, you have to get the real officials back in there. Otherwise, they're going to lose me as a fan. And I looked at myself at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday when I had an 8 a.m. class the next day and said, Martin, you have to get your priorities in order. As you see, now I do this for a living. My priorities in order. But I say all that to say, I now understand, but like, I can't, while it was a bad call, I think you have to give some credit to Brandon Staley. Because listen. What do we know about human beings? And what do we know about people who operate in the clutch? What do we know about what happened in that moment in the Superdome when Tommy Lee Lewis got hit by Nickell Robey Coleman upside the head and everybody froze? They froze. Everybody saw what happened. Everybody knew what happened. They froze and they didn't throw the flag. Conversely, officials make mistakes like this all the time in high-pressure situations, high-leverage situations. But Brandon Staley, I listened to this interview we did with Jim Rome earlier yesterday. And it was talking about why he goes for it on 4th down so often. And he's like, he wants to maximize his player's ability. He wants to give the ball to Justin Herbert as many times as he can, right? And I read this profile about him back when he was the defensive coordinator with the Rams, why are the Rams so good on defense? And it was essentially the same thing. Like, without getting too far into the weeds, it was he uses Aaron Donald and he uses Jalen Ramsey in such a way that maximizes their ability. But don't you think there's some level of Staley forcing the issue that makes this Chargers team good and makes decisions like this happen, or no?
No. I've always thought coaches should have gone for it more on 4th down, but their nature is to be conservative because if it doesn't work, what is the media going to say about that call? The problem I have with that pass interference is it changed the entire complexion of the game. It, at least in my opinion, was the reason the Cleveland Browns lost that game. That's 4th and 8. It was an incomplete pass, which was technically offensive pass interference. Cleveland gets that ball. Either they kick a field goal or they run the clock out. They're running the ball very effectively the entire game. And that's just one of many calls. That wasn't just the only call. You can watch games every week, multiple games. And they, like a defensive tackle, is tripping as he's near the quarterback. He's stumbling. He goes to tackle him. He hits him just above the knees. That's roughing it. You can't hit him up here. You can't hit him down low. So you have to hit him within here. If I'm tripping and falling, what the fuck am I supposed to do?
Right.
Like, use some common sense. Which game? I'm watching the Bengals and Packers game. They called the DJ Reader for tripping. He didn't trip the guy at all. He got in the backfield. The offensive lineman yanked him because he was about to get a tackle for loss. And when he yanked him and held him, he spun him so his legs looked like he was tripping the back. It was a holding call. They didn't call it.
Right.
And it was clear as day. And it's like, dude, make the right call. Make the right call. Stop doing this.
I have always wondered why there is not more of a variety in the officiating. Why Bill Vinovich will be calling Super Bowls for the next, 10 years. But in any event, that's whatever. But I want to get on to the Bills.
But the Chargers are the real deal, though. The Chargers are the real deal.
And okay, so that's because I wanted to ask you after we get off to this Chiefs thing, because, this AFC West is really spicy up. Yeah, the Bills, 38, Chiefs, 20. I was on the Chiefs. I thought maybe, the streak was over. Maybe they'd cover the spread. Turns out, I just don't think that the Chiefs are a very good football team right now. Can they get better? They can. But, I mean, you were on the Bills, so tell me, TJ, is this good Chiefs? I mean, is this good Bills or is this bad Chiefs?
No, it's good Bills. Obviously, the Chiefs aren't playing to their capabilities. They can't run the ball effectively. Defensively, they've been below average defensively for years now. They got a little better when they won the Super Bowl, but for the most part, they've been an average to below average defensive team. Their money is spent on offense side of the ball. Their best defensive player, Chris Jones, did not play. That hurts them, and it hurts them a ton. But the Bills just have a good football team. Everybody thought after week one, and I was everybody like, oh, what's wrong with the Bills? It was just a blip. They had a little speed bump. That speed bump just so happened to be week one against the Steelers. The Bills are pretty much playing now how they finished the season last year. They look unstoppable. Like, Josh Allen can run. He can throw. He can run. It's like, they don't have a weakness. Their weakness coming into the season, in my opinion, was their pass rush. They draft Gregory Rousseau from Miami, and they're getting pressure on the quarterback defensively with Leslie Frazier and Sean McDermott. The Bills are the real deal, man.
So I think so, too, at this point. And I think the Chiefs are significantly worse than we thought. Like, because – we talk about they can't run the ball effectively. They can't run the ball ineffectively. They haven't even found ways to seem evenly, like, typically when a team can't run the ball effectively, you'll see them like doing bubble screens or like doing all types of different things to try to like free up the run game. This is not happening in Kansas City right now. It feels like, especially the last 2-3 weeks, defenses have a complete stranglehold on what they're doing. And Mahomes is not seeming like he's having the guys open or having the patience or having the wherewithal or whatever he had in the first two seasons to find guys open on those breaking routes. But I did say, like, the Chiefs don't feel like a team you can see they're not a team that can sustain. If the Chiefs needed 4 10-play drives to win a game, I don't think that they can do it right now.
There's not many teams that can, to be honest with you. the more successful offenses in the league are able to get quick play touchdowns. The Chiefs need this acronym, KISS. That's what Andy Reid needs to do this week, KISS it. Keep it super simple. You know, they do all this fancy stuff and all these motions and these formations, and just keep it super simple. Get back to playing effective football, whether it's cute or not. We just want to be effective. And then do that other stuff as a changeup instead of doing all the fancy stuff all the time and the simple stuff as a changeup. They need to change that because I believe they've gotten away from that. Run the ball a little more. You have a new offensive line, and I know you got Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. It's easy for us to throw the ball. We can get yards. Run the ball a little more. Just keep it simple. Keep it simple and see if that changes things.
So right now, you got the Chargers and the Chiefs. They're tied on FanDuel. They're tied atop AFC West odds, plus 125. You can get either one of them plus 125 to win the division.
Chargers.
Okay. And the Chargers
and they already
right
have
now,
a game up on them.
They got a game up on them. Right. So that's what I thought too. I thought the Chargers. I went to go check it. Was shocked to find the odds were even. I thought that the Chargers should have been almost favored to win the AFC West by this point, especially with the Gruden news. And I think the Broncos kind of came down, you know, the Broncos seemed to be who they thought we were, who I thought they were at least.
The Broncos and the Raiders.
And then over-unders for the Chargers, 11 and a half wins. I feel like you have to take the over there, no?
Yeah, the Chargers, they're 4-1, correct?
Yeah.
They should get to about 12 or 13. I mean, it's the National Football League, man. You're gonna have some slip ups. It's hard to sweep your division. So you can just throw in another one or two losses just from your division. But the Chargers, if you look at that team, they bring in Corey Linsley from Green Bay. They really don't have a weakness offensively. They really don't have a weakness defensively. Granted, they need to stay healthy. Chargers are good, man. Just hopefully now they can get some fans in L.A. to start coming to the stadium and giving them a true home field advantage.
That and a place kicker. All right, TJ. The Green Bay Packers are traveling to Soldier Field to take on the Chicago Bears. Chicago off a big win versus the hapless Las Vegas Raiders, the rudderless Las Vegas Raiders. And the Packers off of a, I don't know if you want to call it a big win, off a this pretty ugly win after five field goals were missed in the last like 8 minutes of the game. Packers win that one against the Bengals. The Bears beat the Raiders. Packers are 4.5-point favorites at Soldier Field. TJ, where are you on this game?
No such thing as an ugly win in the NFL. We just want to win. Doesn't matter how it looks. I just want to win.
Spoken like somebody who's won an NFL game before, and I was speaking as somebody who never has.
I like the Packers. Packers are the better team. They're better pretty much at every position, minus the defensive line, or maybe you say linebacker, depending on what you want to classify Khalil Mack as. The Bears are going to struggle offensively to just move the ball on the Packers. The Packers are playing good defense, obviously. But there is going to come a point in time where somebody has a smart defensive coordinator and they say, I'm not letting you throw 60% of these passes to Davante Adams. I'm not going to let you throw all your passing yards to Davante Adams. I just hope it's not this week. I'm taking the Packers.
I'm taking the Packers too. I think that people look at the Bears last week and what they did to the Raiders and think, man, the Raiders walked into that game 3-1. Like the Raiders were, you know, I didn't buy the Raiders initially. I still don't buy them now. And in fact, now I can't even sell the stock now that the head coach has gotten the Jazzy Jeff treatment. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going with the Packers. That front four had Joe Burrow in the hospital. He finished the game, but went to the hospital. I think you can't underestimate that. Joe Burrow was on his back. Justin Fields will be on his back, or Andy Dalton, because Justin Fields did nick his knee up. He's supposed to play, supposed to start. We'll see. You know how Matt Nagy loves Andy Dalton. The Chargers are going across the country to Baltimore. The Ravens are 3-point favorites at home. You have the Chargers off the game of the week in the AFC last week, beating the Browns. The Ravens on Monday night had a – I mean, Lamar Jackson had – that's the type of thing that they crown Brady for. That type of comeback in the fourth quarter is what they talk about when they're talking about franchise quarterbacks. TJ, where are you at this game?
I like the Chargers. And the Ravens have squeaked by against the Chiefs. Squeaked by a last-second field goal. Longest in NFL history against the Lions. Getting manhandled pretty much the entire game against the Colts, come back and win it in overtime. I like the Chargers. What they can do offensively is put a ton of pressure on Baltimore, either on the ground or in the air. Justin Herbert's fantastic. The Ravens have just been having so many come from behind or last second victories. I just don't know if they can continue to play that way. I'm going to go with the Los Angeles Superchargers.
I'm taking the Chargers too. Even like I love the Chargers in this spot. I think the Ravens, I do think these are two of the better teams in the AFC, but I just think the Ravens are now going to start to fall off. I think the injuries that we all were worried about at the beginning of the season are probably going to start to have their impact now. And also, like you said, Ravens have won in some very interesting ways. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had never fumbled before until the Ravens punched it out to win that game. A 66-yard field goal had never been kicked before and made until it went to the Ravens to win that game. These are just things I'm not banking on, and I don't think that Brandon Staley's coaching strategy is an accident. I think it's very controlled aggression. I think one of the best things that, like, millionaires do, I've read several books about it, not that I have millions, but apparently they make decisions quickly, right? They don't stew over the decision that long. And if it's a bad decision, they make another quick decision to get out of that bad decision, as opposed to pondering whether or not this is a good or bad move. They make a move. I think what Brandon Staley has done, if you look, his analytics department and so on, has made it so they just make decisions. They just make the decision and they go. So they already know if they're going. They know if they're punting. They know beforehand. And I think it affects the game in a way that we haven't seen yet. So I'm going with the Chargers +3 as well. Now, America's team, the Dallas Cowboys, are traveling to what used to be America's team when Tom Brady was there. Either you hated him or you loved him. You definitely had an opinion about the New England Patriots. Now they're just the Bill Belichick Patriots. Cowboys are getting are 4-point favorites right now in Gillette. TJ, what do you think about this one?
When you look at the forecast, it's raining the forecast on Saturday, but it's clear skies and sunny on Sunday. Cowboys offense will be ready to go. They can run it, they can throw it, and both of them are equal. There's not one better than the other. So I'm taking the Dallas Cowboys. Bill Belichick will throw something at Dak, but Dak's playing at a level, it's just unreal right now. Dak Prescott is playing extremely well, and the Dallas Cowboys have shown you they can beat you either way. And the crazy thing is DeMarcus Lawrence isn't even playing. They went to Los Angeles and beat the Chargers, and we all love the Chargers right now. So I'm going with the Dallas Cowboys.
See, TJ, this line opened at +1.5 and for the Cowboys. Cowboys were 1.5-point underdogs. They are now 4-point favorites.
Wow.
That swing is incredible. You know what's happening? The entire world saw the New England Patriots almost lose to Davis Mills and the Houston Texans. And you know what, TJ? They damn sure should have. And I would have hit my underdog pup of the week. And they damn sure should have. What are you doing with that fake punt, David Culley? But anyway, in any event, I get Mike McCarthy as a head coach. I get Bill Belichick as a head coach. That is not even a mismatch. That's not even fair. That's David versus Goliath. That is an unfair fight. Ring the bell, okay? I understand that the Cowboys are great on offense. They've been incredibly opportunistic on defense so far, especially with Trayvon Diggs. But I'm going to wait on this game, TJ, because I like the Patriots side just because everybody's going to bet on Dallas. I'm going to wait on this game. I'm going to bet on it right before, what time is it, 4:25 Eastern Standard Time. When this game kicks off, I will be putting a unit on the Patriots plus whatever they are because I just want to fade all of America.
Good luck with that one.
All right, so we got the Buffalo Bills at the Tennessee Titans. The Bills are 4.5-point favorites. TJ, there was two bets in all of football that were one of the best bets ever. Bills and Alabama first half. The Bills have won the first half, and Alabama has won the first half every week, pretty much for the last 15 weeks consecutively. This Saturday, Alabama lost the first half and ended up losing the game to Texas A&M. Where are you in the Bills game, which has no impact on any of the things that I just said, but in a gambler's perspective, that makes sense to me, that the Bills are in trouble.
I'm going with the Bills. They defensively, number one in points allowed. Offensively, they're scoring the most points. What else do you want? Everybody was in a huff. They lose week one against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Oh, my God, the Buffalo Bills are not what we thought. Josh Allen isn't as good as we thought. Oh, it was just a little speed, but a little bump in the road. They are back, and they're better than ever. They didn't just beat Kansas City. They humiliated them. If this is a boxing analogy, it was a knockout within the first six rounds. And they're going to keep this train rolling. And, you know, a train just doesn't stop. It takes a long time for a train to come to a complete stop. The train is rolling. Tennessee Titans are just in the way. We can't stop. When I say we, because I'm going with the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, see, how exactly far that train will roll, several math teachers will tell you that I had a lot of trouble ascertaining that exact amount. However, I do think that the train is going to keep on rolling at least for one more week, right? It's not a word problem. I can't solve for X, but I do know, like you just said, ones are easy to add up. You got the number one offense, the number one defense, and the Buffalo Bills. They just demolished the Chiefs. I like the Titans to be able to score in this game, but I just don't see how, after watching that Buffalo offense against Kansas City, which we know has absolutely paper mache defense, that Buffalo offense is impressive, and it looks very simple to execute. It reminds me of kind of like everything kind of looks the same until it doesn't, and then it's like, oh, boy. Now, there goes Sanders, Diggs, whoever, Dawson Knox up the sideline for, you know, a bomb. So I'm going with the Bills -4.5. I've lost a ton of money betting against the Bills, so hopefully I can turn this tide. TJ, do you know your lemon pepper parlay of this week?
Lemon pepper parlay lock of the week. America's team against the former of America's team. Former America's team. So I'm taking the Dallas Cowboys over New England Patriots, giving up 4. And the team we were just speaking of. I'm taking the Buffalo Bills over the Tennessee Titans. The Bills, Josh Allen, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott. I like that recipe.
My lemon pepper parlay lock of the week. I'm taking all money line favorites, 3 of them, okay? So I'm taking the Kansas City Chiefs on the money line. I know they've been ugly the last few weeks. Washington football team is always ugly. I'm taking the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Geno Smith-led and worst defense in the league, having Seattle Seahawks on the money line. And also, after everything that happened in Las Vegas, all those emails that came out, you got me messed up. You don't think I'm taking Teddy Two Gloves on the money line with the Denver Broncos. Let's eat.
Man, that really, when you just sit there and think about what happened with the rate, like who's calling the plays, Greg Olsen, not the Fox Greg Olsen, like they're going to be, it's, man, this has potential to be ugly. Like it can get ugly really, really quick for the Raiders. And it was, you know, all the support. Oh, they beat the Ravens. Oh, they're good. They're ready to go. And then it's just boom.
You know, I, sucks. All those rude knock on woods, if you're with me, it's silent in Allegiant Stadium today.
Yeah, well, you look at it on the bright side. They're the first ones out the gate looking for a new head coach. So they get a head start on everybody.
Right. Beat Jacksonville to the punch. All right, TJ.
All right, bro.